Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Allegra, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, and Shifra Bat Sara, and elevating the souls of Allegra, Bat Rachel, Pesach Seb Ben Chava, Harav Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Dennis Shore, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. This week's subject is the potential for a world of utter calamity as a result of the coronavirus. In other words, the potential for complete economic collapse and what that would lead to in the United States if, God forbid, we had complete economic collapse on a worldwide scale. The horrific consequences that that could lead to, including eventually the American people turning to a Hitler-like demagogue, all types of horrific possibilities. That danger exists right now. There is a danger of that happening. But first, let me start off by saying, Ani lo Navi o Ben Navi, which means in Hebrew, I am not a prophet or the son of a prophet. So I don't know what's going to be. Everything depends upon, first of all, how quickly a vaccine is created in order to prevent the virus, and how quickly a drug is created in order to kill the virus, because there are two ways to deal with the situation medically. One is to create a vaccine that will prevent the virus, that will prevent people from getting infected in the first place, and the second is to create a drug, or to use a drug that we currently have, that will kill the virus. If that can be done quickly, if that can be done very quickly, then the possibility exists that this will just be a temporary recession, that you'll just have a temporary recession as a result of this, and people will have been inconvenienced. And of course, thousands of people have died, but society as a whole will not be permanently affected in an appreciable manner, in a substantial manner. That's a possibility. And then you'd have a recession like you had after 9/11, a temporary recession, and there could be a fairly rapid recovery. That's a possibility that exists if a vaccine is quickly developed and can be mass-produced. You know, you could develop a vaccine, but can you mass-produce it? Can you give it to billions of people? That's another question. Or if you have a drug that can kill the virus right away, can it be mass-produced? Can it be administered in a way which can deal with this crisis quickly and effectively? Also, even if you have a vaccine, how effective is the vaccine? What percentage of prevention are you creating? 50% of people will not get the virus if they get the vaccine, or 75%. Or 90%, or 20%, who knows? So even the vaccine itself, how effective would the vaccine be in terms of the total population? How effective would a drug that kills the virus be? Would it be effective only on certain patients and not on others? Those are all unknowns, uncertainties that exist. But if we could find a medical solution that really does overwhelmingly kill the virus through a drug or prevent the virus through a vaccine, if we found a solution like that effectively, quickly, that would certainly greatly mitigate the consequences of what can happen now economically and otherwise to society. But if we don't find a virus vaccine, or if we don't find a drug that effectively kills off this virus, or that deals with the virus in a way where we have a medical solution to the problem, if we don't find that quickly, and if it does take a year or a year and a half, if we have to lock down huge segments of the economy for another year or a year and a half or even longer, the consequences could be horrific, absolutely horrific. First of all, millions of people could die. You could have millions of deaths. If the virus keeps spreading and people keep getting infected, and as the experts say, 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70% of the population of the world is going to be infected. If that happens, you could have millions of deaths before a medical solution is developed to this. And a complete collapse of healthcare systems. The healthcare systems can completely collapse. The number one problem that healthcare systems face, I mean, there are all types of problems. There's all types of shortages and all types of difficulties, and there are not enough doctors, not enough hospital beds, and not enough nurses, and even hospital personnel get sick and get infected. All types of terrible problems. And the biggest one probably is that there aren't enough ventilators, because this is a respiratory disease. You need ventilators to keep people breathing. There simply are not enough ventilators to deal with an overwhelming flood of sick people suddenly coming into the hospital system. So doctors and scientists are working on all types of solutions. Can we mass produce ventilators? Can we create a situation where there's one ventilator per patient? Can we create a situation where one ventilator can treat several patients? That would certainly help if a solution like that could be developed. So that's part of the issue that's going to be challenging the medical establishment, because if you have a complete collapse in the healthcare system, if it's completely overrun, as you're seeing now in many parts of Italy, for instance, a complete collapse of the healthcare system, where the hospitals are overrun and decisions have to be made, who is going to live and who is going to die. That's, of course, a nightmare scenario. And, of course, the collapse of the economy. You know, first of all, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has already lost one-third of its value. And, of course, NASDAQ and all the other measures on the stock market, have taken devastating blows since this virus became a crisis situation. One-third of the value of Dow Jones stocks, for instance, have been lost. One-third of the value. It's a gigantic loss. And just to give you an illustration, Donald Trump, when he became president, because of the tax cuts and the regulatory relief that he promised, which any Republican president would have promised to do, because of this, stocks went up astronomically. But stocks are now lower than they were when Donald Trump became president. Stocks are now below the levels they were when Donald Trump was inaugurated as president. That's to give you an illustration of just how devastating the past few weeks have been on the stock market. Unemployment claims last week. You have weekly unemployment claims. Usually unemployment claims go up or down 10%, 15%, 20% in a week. And that's considered to be, you know, 10%, 20%, 30% increase or decrease in unemployment claims. Those fluctuations give you some idea as to where the job market is going. You know how much unemployment claims went up last week? 700%. Seven times what they were the week before. It's completely unprecedented. Those are depression level statistics. And let me just tell you, by the way, that the difference between, because most people know very little about the economy and about finance, and I'm not claiming to be a big expert myself, but most people really have no idea. Recession, of course, is when the economy is shrinking. If it shrinks in two different quarters, if the GDP shrinks in at least two different quarters in the United States, that is regarded as a recession in the United States. A shrinking economy is a recession. It could be a mild recession, or it could be a devastating recession. It could be a very, very difficult and painful recession. But a depression is far worse than a recession. A depression is far deeper and far worse. And the last depression we had in the United States, for instance, was in the 1930s. And that was not just in the United States, it was a worldwide depression. The 1930s depression led to 25% unemployment in the United States, massive unemployment in Europe, in Germany, in Weimar Germany, a loaf of bread cost 4 billion, 4 billion with a B, francs, not francs, marks. And that meant that people had to go with huge bags of marks just to buy a loaf of bread. So in other words, money became valueless, became worthless, in effect, in Germany. There was desperation, absolute complete desperation. And the German people, of course, the German people could have sought various solutions. There always were economic solutions and remedies available, but the German people decided that their solution was going to be to elect Adolf Hitler. And we know what that led to. Led to the Holocaust and over 6 million Jews being brutally murdered. And it led to a world war where 55 million people were killed in the war. Economic depression makes people desperate and leads to terrible consequences. In the United States, you could have had the same situation, but you know, Americans were not... Americans at the time, as much as the unemployment, as much as the bread lines and the soup lines and the tent cities that were set up and the other horrible things that happened during the Depression, as bad as it was, and it was very bad, as bad as the situation was, many Americans were used to being poor, were used to going through rough times in the 1930s. When the Depression hit in 1929, when it started in 1929 with the stock market crash in 29, and then deepened in the 30s. Yes, it was very rough. Yes, it led to all types of calamities. But Americans were used to living in terrible... There were many... A very large segment of the American public already lived in poverty, already understood what poverty was at that time. You now have a completely different American public that is completely spoiled economically. People who are poor today in America live far better than many people who were considered to be well off before the Depression in the 30s. I mean, now even poor people have a house to live in. And I'm not talking about homeless. The homeless are usually people are usually drug addicts and alcoholics or mentally ill people. If you're not mentally ill and you're not a drug addict, you're not an alcoholic, you shouldn't be homeless. There are all types of housing solutions, and people are generally not homeless if they don't have a substance abuse problem or if they're not mentally ill. But homeless people, the people in American society today who are poor, who are below the poverty line, what's defined as the poverty line, those people have a home. Those people have a roof over their heads. Those people usually have a car. They own a vehicle. They have a home. They have clothes to wear. They're not starving. People are not starving in American society. That's baloney that there's starvation and hunger in American society. If there is, it's because somebody's mismanaging whatever they get, including the checks they get from the government, because the people on welfare and other people, they get a check from the government. Of course, if they're drinking all the money away, what can you do? Then they would be starving. Or if they're using it all on drugs, then they would be starving if they're using it to support a drug habit. But there is no reason for anybody to be hungry in America. There's no reason for anybody to be homeless. People today live far better than they did before the Depression of the 1930s. Why am I bringing that up? I'm bringing that up because if there were an economic calamity like the 30s to strike America now, and this coronavirus has the potential of doing that, if we don't get a vaccine and we don't get a drug that kills the virus off, and we do have to wait, and the economy is shut down for a year or more, that can lead to a Great Depression. That can lead to another Great Depression like the 1930s. It could lead to absolute catastrophe, massive bankruptcies all across the board, just a catastrophic situation, turning America into an economic wasteland, vast areas into an economic wasteland. And with Americans being so spoiled, with Americans being so used to having a house to live in, having a car to drive, having air conditioning in when it's hot, and heat when it's cold, and all the other things which Americans take for granted, but which prior generations could not take for granted. Those things were not taken for granted by prior generations. Clothes to wear. Those things were not something that every American automatically had. If that is lost, and by the way, I'm only discussing what poor people have. The vast majority of Americans are middle class. They're not below the poverty line. The middle class have far more than all of that. The middle class have far more than just a house to live in and a car to drive and clothes to wear. They have far more than that. They take it for granted. But they have all types of things which would have been considered luxuries by the generation that eventually, in the 1920s, that eventually had to face the depression of the 1930s. You take away the houses with the two-car garages and the nice suburban lifestyle or the urban lifestyle. You take all that away from people. You take away everything. You have a run on the banks and like you had in the 30s and panic, and people thought even their money wasn't safe even in the banks. Their money's not safe in the stock market. Money's not safe in bonds. Money's not safe in the banks. Money's safe nowhere. You create that type of chaos, that type of fear, that type of panic, that type of calamity. In today's America, America will be a world gone mad. And anything can happen then. You can have happen here what happened in Germany, in Weimar Germany, where the German people the German people embraced Hitler enthusiastically. Hitler was the most beloved leader in German history. No German leader ever had more enthusiastic support among every segment of German society than Adolf Hitler. That says something about the evil of the German people, who are an evil people, who are an evil, cruel, and murderous people. But it also says, and by the way, when I say that, I don't mean genetically, I mean culturally. There are, of course, Germans who are exceptions to the rule. There are Germans who are not evil, cruel people, but Germany as a whole proved themselves during the Holocaust to be monstrously cruel and evil people. Sadistic, cruel, evil, monstrous people who took pleasure in brutally slaughtering millions of innocent people. Took pleasure in doing it, loved it sadistically. They were laughing as they were throwing the Jewish babies into the gas chambers and the ovens. Laughing as they tortured and did medical experiments on people. You see pictures of the German soldiers laughing and going to church services in the concentration camps. The German soldiers attending Sunday church services in the death camps while the crematorium the crematorium smoke was burning human bodies. And innocent men, women, and children were being shoved into gas chambers to be choked to death. You know what it's like to be choked to death? And makeshift ovens were set up to quickly throw Jewish babies and little children that were arriving at the camps in terrible cattle cars, to throw these babies and children into the gas ovens quickly. Or huge holes were the people were forced to dig their own graves, and mass graves were created. And the German soldiers in Russia, for instance, murdered huge numbers. About 2 million Jews were murdered in Russia and thrown into mass graves. And you see the German soldiers laughing as they're firing their machine guns into the helpless, frightened Jewish children and women falling into the graves. So this is a cruel, sadistic, monstrous Amalekite people that would do something like this. Monstrous people. Were there Germans who were exceptions to the rule? Of course there were Germans who were exceptions to the rule. But they were the exceptions. The rule was the monstrous, brutal mob that was the vast majority of the German people. And that's what economic calamity turned the German people into. Okay? You know, even when there's economic calamity like a depression, you don't have to become a monster. The Jews, for instance, they also faced economic calamity. And in the depression, there was starvation. There was a lot of starvation in the United States. People were literally starving and freezing and hungry and in terrible, terrible shape. But you had Jewish neighborhoods like the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where there was terrible Jewish poverty and terrible starvation and terrible conditions, horrific conditions. And yet, the Jews in the Lower East Side in the 1930s would leave their doors open. There was no crime. There was virtually no crime. Nobody would rob you. Nobody would go in. You didn't have to lock your door in your apartment in the 1930s on the Lower East Side of Manhattan or in other Jewish neighborhoods. You never had to lock your apartment because it was unthinkable that Jews would go in and rob their neighbors or Jews would. It just didn't happen. People were safe and people treated each other with basic decency. So you don't have to become a monster just because of economic hard times the way the German people did, the way the Ukrainians and the Latvians and Lithuanians and the Estonians and the Austrians and all these other people and the Poles, what they did to their fellow what they did to the Jews. They never considered the Jews to be their fellow citizens, even though the Jews lived in Poland for 1,000 years. They never considered the Jews to be Poles and enthusiastically supported the Holocaust and the extermination of the Jews during the Holocaust. So you don't have to be like that, but these people were. And will the American people become like this spoiled generation? Is this a generation that's going to become? Is this a generation that's going to become like that? I think the potential is very, very, very much the potential is there. I think so. And so, if we had a Great Depression and people lost everything, and you had a situation where people were just utterly felt helpless and desperate. And a Hitler-like figure comes along, on the left or on the right, could be on the left too, on the left or on the right, and promises easy solutions and easy answers. The possibility the American people would listen to that, I think would be very high possibility of that in a depression-type situation, if it was really like the Great Depression of the 30s. I think there's a very, very great danger of that happening. And I'm not saying that will happen. I'm not saying that will happen. First of all, I'm not saying there will be a depression. But again, let me run by some of the dangerous possibilities here. If there is not a vaccine or a drug, and again, in the beginning of this discussion, we explained the vaccine prevents infection. The drug would be to kill the virus once somebody's already infected. But if there is not a medical solution to this problem within a year, or so, and the economy remains shut down for a whole year or even more, which would be economically devastating if that happened. It would be devastating. If that happens, some of the other consequences could be the danger of the U.S. government actually going bankrupt, the U.S. government collapsing and going bankrupt. Because we already have $1 trillion annual deficits. In other words, the yearly deficit of the U.S. government is now $1 trillion, now up to $1 trillion a year. And that was before the virus. And in addition to that, if because of the virus, you're going to have a drastic decline in tax revenue, in the revenue that the government gets from taxpayers. Because people are not working and people in job and businesses are closing down and people are not going to be paying taxes. So you'll have a drastic decline in revenue. So that deficit will skyrocket, will balloon. Plus, these crazy politicians are saying we should have $1 trillion to $2 trillion stimulus package for the economy, which I think is a terrible mistake. but it's like the bailout that you had after the 2008, 2009 recession. So that would add another trillion or $2 trillion to the debt, and that, in addition to the huge debt that the government already has, I mean, you could face the prospect of the government having a difficult time meeting its obligations, and that could lead to the government defaulting, which would be absolutely devastating. Devastating if that happened. That never happened, even in the 1930s. The government never defaulted on any of its payments. And just to give you an illustration of how serious it is, but the corporate debt and personal debt are very, very high. Very, very high. One half of all Americans live from paycheck to paycheck. So if no paycheck is coming in, you could have a very, very bad situation here for huge numbers of the American people very quickly now. Instead of paycheck to paycheck, they're going to be living on unemployment insurance. And that means the unemployment insurance bill, the unemployment insurance costs will go up astronomically. And did you know that over 40% of Americans, if they faced an expense of $500, would have a very hard time coming up with just $500? If they had an emergency where they had to come up with $500, over 40% of Americans would have a hard time coming up with an extra $500. That's how thin their economic base is. And some of it is because of irresponsibility, overspending, and not saving enough. But some of it is. But over 40% of Americans could not handle a situation where they would need just another $500. What? How are those people? That's over 40% of the American public. How are they going to fare in a situation where everything would be shut down and there'd be no jobs and nothing? And what's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to them? How are they going to meet their mortgage payments? And if we have a moratorium on mortgage payments, which some people have suggested, you think the banks are going to stay in business? The banking system will face the prospect of collapse if that happens. Insurance companies. A lot of people will be turning to insurance. A lot of people will go bankrupt. Once they go bankrupt, you can't collect from them anymore. And then the banking system and the insurance companies, and these are important parts of the economy. I don't like the banks. I don't like the people who run the banks. I think they're crooks. I think they're evil people. They're immoral people. I don't like them in any way. But if the banks start collapsing and going under, which we began to see in 2008, 2009, we began to see it, and then we had a rec and then eventually we had a recovery where that gradually bottomed out. But if you don't have a bottoming out, it doesn't bottom out, and you have a far greater number collapsing all at once, it could be devastating. It could be devastating. Italy has one of the largest economies in the European Union, in Europe. And you see what's happened to Italy. Is Italy's banking system going to survive this crisis? Is Italy's economy going to survive this crisis? What if Italy goes bankrupt? What if Spain goes bankrupt? Spain and Italy have, the Spanish economy is very weak and is very weak as it is. Spain, Portugal, Greece. What if their economies go bankrupt and it starts a domino effect, and then Italy's economy goes bankrupt? Italy would really be a devastating blow if it went bankrupt, and that would also cause a run on the stock market and panic. And if you had a run on the banks where people started trying to pull their money out all at once, your bank doesn't have enough cash to give you. You start pulling all the money out. If you want checks, okay, you can get a check, but where are you going to put it? And your bank, it's the whole situation If you have a run on the banks, the whole situation will endanger the banking system, the integrity of the banking system. Now, again, I'm giving you this worst case scenario just to explain to you how much danger we can be in. This is all the hand of Hashem, of God. God is angry with the world because the world is immoral and evil. This is a rotten, evil generation of selfish, disgusting people. And the world is angry. And the Jews are the ones who decide. Because God, the most important decision God makes about what happens in the world comes from what happens with his people, with the Jewish people. When the Jewish people are good and righteous, it impacts the whole world. When they're evil, it impacts the whole world. Nothing is as important. All nations are blessed through Israel or cursed through Israel. Oh, bless them that bless thee, curse them that curse thee. All nations, their destiny is tied to Israel. How they behave with Israel, what they do vis-a-vis Israel, all, of course, decides their fate, decides their future, decides their eternity. I don't know what God is going to do. I don't know what God intends. Well, if God will enable the scientists who are frantically working on a vaccine that will prevent the infection, or on a drug that will kill the virus. I don't know if God will give them the ability to do this, if God will decide to give us more time and give us another chance. I don't know what God will decide to do. But I do know that in the end, God is the one who actually makes the decision. Actually, we make the decision and God reacts to what we do. It's true that God can decide to be merciful and overlook certain things, or to be compassionate. Compassion means rachmanut in Hebrew. Not in English, but in Hebrew, rachmanut, which is the translation of the word compassion into Hebrew. But the Hebrew definition of rachmanut means you give more time to somebody to change and to straighten themselves out. It's giving more time. I don't know. I don't know what's going to be. But the reason I'm running through this nightmare scenario is just to explain to people how serious it is, how important it is that we, that all of us as individuals, because all of us, each human being is a world unto himself or herself. All of us have to do what God commands us to do, and in our own lives and in our relationship with others, and certainly in our relationship with Israel and the Jewish people. Nothing is more important than Israel and the Jewish people. JTF is the one organization that speaks like this and that says the type of things that you've heard on this program week after week for many, many years. We're the only ones bringing a message of truth to the people of Israel. And we reach tens of thousands of Jews with this. We have an advertising campaign for our Hebrew videos. And we reach tens of thousands of Jews with our message every single week. Will they listen to our message? Will it affect them? That's up to them. They have free will. But at least we're bringing a message of truth to the people of Israel. At least we warn them. At least we explain that for Israel, the true message here is self-sufficiency and doing what Hashem commands us to do and following the Torah and following the commandments of God. And again, being a light unto the nations, holy nation, nation of priests, and doing all the things that the Jewish people are expected to do. That's what is expected of the Jewish people, and that's the message we bring to the Jews of Israel in our videos every week that, again, reach tens of thousands of Israeli Jews every week. So here with JTF, you are reaching the Jews of Israel, who are the most important group in the world by far. By far, the Jews of Israel are the most important group in the world. They're the ones that decide, really, what God will do. And We're trying to wake them up, because right now they live in their own little fantasy world. We're trying to wake them up, just as we try to wake people up with these English language videos every week. We try to wake people up. That's our job. That's what we have to do. That's what we're in this world to do. Maybe it won't turn out to be so bad. I mean, I gave you the worst possible case scenarios where there could be a Great Depression, an economic collapse, and the U.S. government teetering on the brink of bankruptcy, and everybody going bankrupt, and complete panic and hysteria, and the banks going under, and a run on the banks, and the stock market crashing, and all. And then in the end, a Hitler-like demagogue coming along and promising easy solutions, which was complete rebellion against God, of course. So I gave you the ultimate nightmare scenario, which possibly can happen. I hope not, God forbid, I hope it doesn't happen. But it possibly can happen. Or maybe God, because of his endless mercy, will decide not to do this at this time. But you should know that eventually a great judgment day is coming. And this is a warning. Whether it leads to a temporary recession, and because there's a quick medical solution, if that happens, then society will go on and everything will go on. We will have had pain and inconvenience, and thousands will have died, but we will go on. It could be that, and that would be a warning. That would be a warning. Or will it be a much greater warning, where everything collapses around us completely, God forbid? Will it be a much greater warning? I don't know the answer to that. And the answer to that in some ways depends upon us, upon all of us, and upon how we react to this as individuals and how society reacts to what God is trying to warn us about. Those are the open questions. But in the meantime, you're in the right place if you want to reach people with a message of truth, especially if you want to reach the Jews of Israel, God's chosen people. If you want to reach them with a message and get them to change their ways and do what's right, you're in the right place. We're going to do everything we can. We're going to fight the good fight. And God willing, let's hope that God will have mercy on us and that we'll get through this and that there will be a vaccine or there will be a drug or there will be both. And there'll be a medical solution to this so that we can have more time to try to wake people up before it's too late. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.